the last word
with Life Pharmacy. Over 100 local pharmacies nationwide that are always here to help. Life Pharmacy. Live better together.
John Givens is with us for the last word in the environment. So tell us, you've had a big thing for years about illegal turf cutting. Are you the one who tipped off the European Union so that they're taking legal action against Ireland?
Yeah, good evening, Matt. No, I'm afraid it wasn't me, but this has been ongoing for some time. And it's sort of illegality on an epic scale. I mean, and it really is astounding that Ireland has to be dragged kicking and screaming into performing, you know, basic compliance with our own law. And to put sort of numbers on this, the scale of completely illegal turf mining, and let's not call it harvesting, this is mining, this is a one-way destructive process in Ireland. Commercial peat operators operating with no licence, no planning permission, no permits, are extracting 370,000 tonnes, Matt. That's a third of a million tonnes of illegal peat extraction.
How do we know that?
Well, this is the data coming from, presumably this has been provided by the EPA. And the gas thing, of course, is lots of this in turn is being exported. Yet somewhere
along
the way...
How can you bring a lorry? How can you actually extract turf? Even if it's down bog roads in the Midlands, you have to bring that turf in lorries onto main roads and motorways and bring them to the harbours and actually get them onto ships to get. How can that happen without anybody noticing?
Well, I guess they notice. And for example, the EPA, whose job it is to notice these things, they compiled dossiers on 38 sample sites. These are of the smaller ones below the 50 hectare threshold. They compiled these dossiers. They sent them to seven local authorities, Offaly, Westmeath, Roscommon, Tipperary, Longford, Kildare and Sligo. And the total enforcement actions arising from the EPA sending these detailed dossiers, Matt, zero. Not one single local authority was prepared to act. Now, they came up with a whole bunch of reasons why they won't act. They say they don't have the expertise, they haven't the financial resources. Now, they had the financial resources and the expertise to rightly, by the way, demolish an illegally built house in recent months. Yet, this wide-scale illegal peat mining is happening. It is happening in full public glare, and there's no squad cars at the end of those laneways saying, you know, where's your permit, where's your license? And you have your local politicians, and of course many of our rural TDs are four square behind this illegality, pretending, for example, number one, that it isn't happening, and number two, if it is happening, sure, it is just a small local thing with a few fellas trying to get a few sods of turf for the family. This is the kind of nonsense that we hear from some of our rural TDs in defending gross illegality. And the issue here, Matt, is that Ireland again is disgraced at European level. We have some of the last remaining intact peat bogs anywhere, and we're watching them being destroyed, and it is completely illegal. And by the way, people might say, well, people have rights, you know, turbary rights to cut peat. About a decade ago, the Irish state spent over 60 million euros in buying out the turbary rights of several thousand people, and they were correctly bought off from those traditional rights. Therefore, those rights expired. So nobody can say, well, you know, I'm just doing something that my grandparents did. And also, your grandparents weren't extracting a third of a million tons of peat. So yeah, I'm annoyed about it, Matt. We all should be.
Listener says it's needed for horticulture.
And well, we don't need it for horticulture. There are non-peat options for horticulture. In fact, many responsible horticulture centres won't touch it. And in fact, Matt, in Britain, horticulture, peat is banned in horticulture in Britain. So there is no excuse. And if there are any garden centres in Ireland stocking horticulture, number one, they should stop it. And number two, their customers should tell them to stop it.
Okay. How is it allowed to export and sell a product but not harvest it, says another listener?
As I say, we have this gaping lacuna, this huge hole where we have all these rules, and we're fantastic, Matt, in Ireland with rules and regulations. We have them all over the place. The problem where it breaks down is enforcement. The political will to actually deal with this illegality is simply not there.
Okay. Tell us about something that the US National Science Foundation is doing after an instruction from the White House.
Yeah, this is one of the... Now, We've all heard of Project 2025. This was the crazy people behind Trump's run for re-election. And they came up essentially with, a far-right hit list of regulatory destruction. And they've sort of ploughed through that. We've seen Elon Musk and so on last year. But this year they've taken it to a whole new level. So, for example, the National Science Foundation has been ordered to remove 900 ocean data collecting buoys. I call them buoys. The Americans, I think, call them buoys. These are high-tech gadgets that are lodged in all around the world. It's not just in US oceans. These are located all around the world. And these take ocean temperature measurements. They measure salinity. They measure changes in temperature. And these cost over $750 million, Matt, to install. And rather than just letting the blasted things run, the Trump administration, in its science-hating rampage, is actually spending tens of millions of dollars to have this equipment removed. So what we're essentially seeing here is the destruction of the scientific record. And probably the best way that one scientist described it is that this is the equivalent of taking the batteries out of the fire alarm. The reason that we need ocean data, ocean sensors, is to tell us what is going on in the oceans. For example, what is the condition of the Gulf Stream and the AMOC? These are things that are critical life and death information. So we have the worst, the most anti-scientific administration, not just in US history, but arguably, Matt, anywhere in the world, possibly outside of Soviet era Russia, in terms of its hatred of science. So this is a new level of self-sabotage is the best way I can describe it. There, you might say, well, what's the benefit? Who gains?
I can tell you. As the way they're probably thinking is, if there's no information, there can be no complaints. And if there's no complaints, they don't have to do anything about what's happening.
You have it in one. That's exactly what's going on here. They're blocking the eyes and they're blocking the ears of the scientific community. They're cutting off our access to raw data. So the type of scientific reports that you and I talk about regularly, in the future, in a couple of years' time, we won't be able to have these conversations, because the raw science, the basic data gathering, this critical data gathering, is being cut off at the knees. And I have to say, it just beggars belief that we're watching this level of atavistic tear down. I mean, science is the basis of civilization, and we're watching these people throwing it onto a bonfire mat.
Okay, you've given out to me previously about plug-in hybrids. You don't like the idea. If people are going to move off the petrol or diesel cars, you don't want them on the plug-in hybrids. You want them to go fully electric. And you have more ammunition to fire at me now.
I'm afraid so. I think I may have previously described plug-in hybrids as the menthol cigarettes of the fossil fuel industry, right? Or the low tar cigarette. I mean, the idea, it was sold to us as the best of all possible worlds. You've got your battery for gliding around the city, and you've got your internal combustion engine for buzzing down the country. What could go wrong? So, what has happened essentially is that we have the International Council on Clean Transportation has done extensive studies. And by the way, these are not opinion studies. This is direct data analysis from 8 million vehicles. And what they find, surprise, surprise, is that the emissions performance on plug-in hybrids are found to be 5 times worse than what the manufacturers say they are. Now, this is for a combination of reasons. Number one, people with plug-in hybrids, despite what they will tell you, rarely bother to plug them in. Why would you? The thing is sitting outside it's 11 o'clock at night. I've put the bins in. Feck, I forgot to plug in the PHEV. I'll go back out. Ah, no, I won't. I'll go to bed. They don't bother because they have a great big engine. That's number one, Matt. Number two, when you've got two engines, you're dragging around double the weight. There's additional weight of a PHEV. And number three, the overall effect is reduced efficiency. So bottom line anyway here is, and for example, we know that standard internal combustion engines produce about 20% more emissions than the manufacturers say. But for PHEVs or plug-in hybrids, it's 400% worse. So the last argument for the lazy boy argument, where I shall, you know, I'll have it both ways. I'll have my EV and I'll have my petrol car. They're gone. And I think they're gone, Matt, for very good reasons. Number one, as we've seen with the data, it just doesn't work. And number two, the options now for straight EVs are absolutely excellent. We've seen more than 20% of the new cars bought in Ireland this year so far are full electric. So cut out the middleman, go electric.
Would you take an electric car, say, for a drive all the way down to Dingle and be happy that you'd be able to get there without coming to a stop, and that then you would be able to recharge down there and come back?
Sure, yeah. And in fact, I've done that particular drive, yeah. In fact, recently I went from Dublin via Kilkenny to Cork City, stayed overnight, drove back the next day on a single charge. Now, the thing is, I could have pulled into any number of high-speed chargers, because unlike a couple of years ago, Matt, when we were having these conversations, there are high-speed chargers all over the place now. Even my hometown of Kilkenny, there are plenty of 150, 200 kilowatt high-speed chargers. The day you go back 5 years, all you had were these out-of-date ESB chargers. The picture has changed dramatically, but, and also what we're seeing now is the advent of long-range EVs.
There's lots of people getting in touch saying you can buy peat briquettes in Ireland. They've been imported from Germany. They've been imported from Latvia. Will we not be better off having our own turf rather than having imported turf with the carbon emissions of bringing it even before you burn it?
Well, here's an even better idea.
None at all, right?
Peat is peat. Everywhere you dig it up, you're creating an ecological disaster. So importing it from somewhere else, equally bad idea. And by the way, the actual travel miles, if you like, the carbon impact on the travel on that is minimal. The real carbon damage with peat bogs is done is when you drain them and destroy them.
Okay. Give us some good news. Tell us about the new dynamic electricity tariffs.
Yeah, this is genuinely good news. And this has come in, Matt, by regulation in Ireland since the 1st of June. So just this week. And what it means now is that what it should mean is that we as consumers of electricity should be able to get lower prices. That's the hope. And also that we should be able to reduce emissions from our electricity system. So there's a few different things going on here. We know, for example, that at the moment our grid runs on a combination of gas, mostly gas. We've eliminated coal and oil pretty much. So the base of our grid is gas. Then we've got lots of wind, and we've got we're adding solar to it. Now, what we find is that we're only able to peak out at about 75% renewable on our grid. So when we go above 75%, we then have to dump the excess. So we see last year, for example, that we dumped 11% of the wind generated in Ireland, worth about 140 million euros, which could have been gone to you and me and to other consumers, had to be dumped, not used, lost. So what we want to do with dynamic tariffs is that people, as and from with their new tariff arrangement with their electricity provider, you get notification, say, 24 hours beforehand. So let's say today you get a notification from your electricity supplier to tell you that based on weather forecasts, that between 12 and 2 o'clock tomorrow afternoon, the electricity will be, 15 cent a kilowatt hour. But between 5 and 7, it will rise to 35 cents. So it's basically dynamically priced. That gives you the opportunity to do the heavy stuff like running the tumble dryer, getting on the dishwasher, maybe plugging in the electric car when it is cheap. Because they want you to use cheap electricity, do the heavy stuff with the cheap electricity, save yourself money and use the renewable energy that otherwise, Matt, we're forced to throw away.
But should that not just be automatic and that you shouldn't have to apply for it? So, for example, if I plug in the hybrid car at night, John, on my way to bed, say at 10 o'clock in the evening, should I not be automatically, because I'm charging the car at night, get a lower rate as a reward for doing it then, without having to make an application for doing that?
Well, this isn't really an application. What you're describing there is something I have at home, for example, at the moment, called night rate, which basically means that my provider gives me a much lower rate electricity between 11 p.m. and 8 a.m. So obviously every night we would top up the EV.
But you have to sign up for that, don't you?
Well, yeah, that's the one you specify. Now, what's changing here is that you now have the option of having a dynamic tariff that allows you to match your consumption with what's happening on the grid. And this is really, really interesting. And it's been stuff that's been talked about for years, but this is finally happening as of the 1st of this month, that we can now sort of tune our electricity usage to what's available on our own national grid, Matt. And what we should hope will happen with this, number one, is reduced electricity bills. And number two, that we can squeeze the amount of gas we used on our network out of it. That assumes, of course, we can get some of these data centres offline. But that, as the fellow says, is another day's story.
there's a lot more to it than that. Thank you very much, John Gibbons.
The Last Word
with Life Pharmacy. Over 100 local pharmacies nationwide that are always here to help. Life Pharmacy. Live better together.